There will always be people that you admire financially mm-hmm. or otherwise. But after you borrow their style and kind of glean their best lessons, your goal should be to learn to see like they see, right? To help you understand the origins of their perspective, you have to learn to look at the world the way that they look at the world.
You're absolutely right. Like I have in my own ways, and as I'm thinking about, you know, as we were talking, thinking about some of the heroes and leaders in my life that I've admired, to your point, it wasn't really about trying to replicate with precision exactly what they did. It was really about recognizing whether or not I might be in the type of environment that they were in when they made a comparable decision. Yes. And as a result, sort of incorporating elements of their decision-making process or sort of problem-solving process into my decision-making and using that to sharpen my sort of next move. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. Today we're talking about outgrowing your financial heroes.
I feel like I want to hear some superhero music.
No, not that kind of hero. Your money hero, which usually is not muscled and dressed in spandex and flying around, you know, saving cats from trees. I don't even know how that became a hero trope.
That's just how they looked back in the day.
Like, was there really a period in time where, like, that was the scariest thing in the neighborhood? It was like, oh my God, a cat is in the tree.
I'm sure if you Googled it, you'd find that it all started in one movie and then it just sort of kept on going.
Yeah.
Why come up with a different idea when there's one that's perfectly
fine? That still
fine?
Works. Right.
There it is.
But for real, topics like this always make me like wish the coming of age movies went beyond just those awkward teenage years and really just explored life as an adult and all the awkward moments that come in your 30s and 40s. I feel like the only movies that do that are rom-coms, romantic comedies, and like the occasional holiday movie where there's some weird subject that comes out, you know, at the Thanksgiving table.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to be learned as an adult. Hollywood's done a pretty good job of capturing some of them. They go a little dark every now and then. Yeah. Like when they do go there, they of course exaggerate some things. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about.
Should be.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about outgrowing your financial heroes. This is a really important topic, and it's one that I think a lot of people have thought about or are like not necessarily willing to admit to themselves, right?
So yeah, they call it something different. Yeah. Like they just say that their parents are crazy or mm-hmm. that everybody's going crazy except for them. And it's like, actually, this is just what it feels like to disagree.
Yeah.
Like this is what it feels like. It
and
feels
it's
like
natural.
Everybody else is losing it.
Yeah. And it's natural. And the challenge is it gets worse, right? You start to sort of time stamp
Sorry
it.
If you expected this to be an optimistic.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It doesn't get better. It's like, all right, you know, they started here and then, you know, next year we went over for Thanksgiving and it was like, wow, like mom is radicalized. I have no idea what she's talking about.
It's not that she's radicalized. She's just stuck in 1998.
Oh, absolutely.
Which was a good year.
Yeah, but that's no shade. I graduated in 98. So that sounds sounds like it was a long time ago. But anyway, this is also a topic that we've written about in the past, I think. And I remember very clearly because it was in the very early stages of the pandemic. And I remember we were actually, just being honest, we were in the middle of a campaign for a financial company and they asked us to write this blog post. And so we wrote it, whatever was on our hearts and our minds at the time. And we basically entitled it like, you know, kind of what to do when you've outgrown your financial hero. So it's something that we have given quite a bit of thought to. We're just sort of extending that conversation and adding a couple of different layers to it for the purpose of this podcast. So I want to jump right in. And I think one of the more obvious questions that I would ask is, well, two-part question. One, who are your financial heroes? And two, have you outgrown them? Are you willing to admit that you've outgrown your original financial heroes?
Okay, so before I answer this question.
Since this is so natural.
Right. Before I answer this question, I have learned that I have to be careful. Because I forget that people that I know in real life actually listen to the podcast.
Oh, yeah. That's why I set the question up this way.
The last episode, I started with a story about my, you know, anonymous attorney friend. And my homegirl, Erin, was like, I think I know who you're talking about. Like, she tweeted me. She's like, I think I know who you're talking about. So first of all, hi, Erin. And from now on, I feel like I need to use coded language for these very.
It's all right. They can come to me for the decoding.
So I'm just kidding. Anything I would say on here, I'd say to your face. Mm. But anyway, my earliest financial hero was my dad. And I used to be one of those little kids who would like do embarrassing stuff, like run around telling their, you know, telling strangers that their dad was rich. And I used to think he was so rich because he would keep this box of loose change under his bathroom sink from when he'd come home and like empty his pockets after a long day of work.
Bathroom sink?
Yeah. Okay. So back when you used to have to like take money to work for vending machines and whatever, like, I don't know what money was used for at work, but he would come home and he just have like pockets full of change from the day. And because he would get undressed in, you know, his bathroom, the place where he kept his coins was under the sink and it was full of money. And I thought he was so rich because of it. And I must have told one of my babysitters that my daddy was rich because he had this box of change, because he recently told me that one of the babysitters actually stole it. So,
wow.
But other than that, my dad, who we call Blue, so you might hear me use it interchangeably, has been my oracle with all things money since I was a little girl. And even to this day, like, he's the one who's gotten me more bullish on crypto, and he's taught himself how to trade. Like, he's still my hero in some aspects of money.
Yes. Blue is a lot of people's hero. If you ever get a chance to meet him, then you know that what she is describing is not an exaggeration. He's a character, but he is also very much a financial enthusiast and in many ways a pioneer. So shout out to Blue. Unfortunately, your daughter just
caused you robbed.
Right.
Hopefully nobody will rob him after
this.
Oh, my
goodness. Yeah.
But the people I've outgrown, to answer the second half of the question, are all like the brazen careerist women that I admired in my 20s. Like all the briefcase carrying, 6-inch heel wearing.
Yep.
Like now that I'm older, I realize that many of my heroes are and were average. And there's nothing, like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being average. But when I had put them on pedestals, it would trigger my imposter syndrome and a bunch of other excuses as to why I wasn't doing what I needed to do.
Yep.
So I had to knock them off. And I've outgrown them.
Yeah, I have a very similar sort of set of heroes. Obviously, I didn't admire women that wore 6-inch heels to work. I mean, I could have, but I know what you mean in terms of, like, the people who had long storied careers. And you know, I remember looking at people like that and thinking, wow, that was so incredible. But unfortunately, you know, and not to sort of, you know, I guess a little sidebar, like those people were not very nice to me at
well,
that juncture in my career.
That's a totally different
and
podcast.
So that's part of the reason why I don't list them here. But I will say, for me, my father is also very much a huge financial influence, and I would say hero in a way. I'll flat out say he's not someone that I sort of like put on a pedestal in that regard now or at this point in my life, but he certainly was. And real briefly, I'll just give you all an example as to why. I want to say it was like the 1970s or something. Before I was born, he was working in New York City. He has 4 children, but somehow he sort of scraped together the money to make this really wild and crazy investment on some property in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Like, had no idea what this was about. The way he tells the story was he literally read an advertisement in the classified section of a newspaper.
Wow.
He saw it. He'd actually asked around and said, I have no idea, you know, like, do you guys know about this? Is this fraudulent? But he was willing to sort of accept that risk, put down the money, and make this investment, even though he'd heard stories of people kind of being cheated out of this land and basically buying like useless swampland back then, right? Well, 30, 40 years later, right? Or, you know, that land appreciated in value. They built cities and cities around that land. And he was actually able to retire on that land and build his dream home on that property, all from being willing to take this wild and crazy risk. sight unseen, by the way. Like, he didn't see it for like maybe 20, 25 years afterwards. Yeah. Where he just felt
he said
like,
he wrote the check and forgot about
it. Wrote the check, forgot about it.
I think it was $4,000.
He would get like calls from people who were willing to buy it over the years, and he would just kind of ignore it and say, you know what, I'll figure it out at some point. Finally went down to see it and was like, oh, okay, well, it's pretty big. It's pretty cool. It is now like a large, you know, community, yeah. Popular for retirees. And yeah. So, yeah.
He's got mango trees back there.
Oh, gosh. He's got an entire sort of farm back there. He's got all kinds of stuff in Florida. So he's living his best life down there. So that's my dad. But I will also say this conversation makes me think about a gentleman who I will not name because I don't think he listens to the podcast, but
you never know.
I doubt it. All right. Well, now I'm going to get really like cloaked identity here, but this is a guy that I used to know and really admire, like in all things. Like him and his wife were just absolutely amazing. And I remember like having a conversation with him one day. And again, I was just confiding in him as I normally would. And he said something to me that kind of revealed like his lack of understanding about something that I thought was like a fundamental sort of financial concept. Like he didn't understand that even if you paid off, let's say, the balance on a credit card and the credit card didn't have, let's say, an annual fee, that you essentially didn't have to pay for anything. He felt like, yeah, no, but there's always, you're always paying something. And I was like, no. Not really.
Yeah.
I don't know what he thought, but I gave him a couple opportunities to kind of like clean it up. But at that point, I realized like, oh, okay. Well, so I can still sort of admire someone as a person, admire him as, let's say, like a father and a husband, but I probably don't need to go to him for like financial advice. And you may be thinking, all right, that's a bit of a stretch. But for me, you know, that was a bit of a like red flag and say, yeah. All right, maybe I need to compartmentalize some of my heroes and find new financial heroes, but I can still go to him for kind of advice. Mm-hmm. But I will say, because I would imagine some of our listeners are thinking like, you know, is there going to be like a call out or something like that? If you're going to consider this one a call out, then so be it. I don't see it as such, but I would say probably one of the sort of most notable financial heroes that I've outgrown, I would say without a doubt, is Robert Kiyosaki.
Oh, yes, Lord.
Yeah. So people who, and I'm not even going to like sort of like curtail it with the like no shade or anything like that. I think that over the last couple of years, anyone that's sort of been following him or paying attention have really seen like a shift. Like he has gotten into like zany and crazy like financial predictions about collapse. Like he literally like makes like bold, unsubstantiated claims about how and when the market
as a media strategy,
right?
I don't know that he believes the things that he says.
No. He's doing it to drum up talk, to get clicks, to get follows, to get people talking, to then ultimately get you in his funnel and pull you into something else. So he's like a master salesman. And by the way, if you're unfamiliar with Robert Kiyosaki, you probably more likely know the book that he is more popular for writing, which is Rich Dad, Poor Dad, one of the most popular financial books, I would say, in modern day history. So, we have sort of gone through this process of admiring people, placing them on a pedestal at certain points in our lives. But then as you start to grow, realizing that you kind of need to put those people aside or in some cases just kind of discard them altogether. And we think a lot of people struggle with this, which is why we wanted to talk about it today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which leads me to ask, why do you think it's so hard for people to do this?
I think it goes back to identity, like we talked about last episode, episode 30, because I think when you elevate someone else, it kind of lets you off the hook with your own goals. At least that was the case in my history. It's almost like you tell your brain that this person has something that I don't have. Yeah. And then because our brains are programmed with like this matching software, it responds to that with like, yes, girl. And here's why. She's blonde. She's 6 feet tall. And she's the child of an oil conglomerate. Like, that's why she has the things that you don't have. And you accept that these are the reasons why you can't have the same things that they have. It's like it's a trick that you have to like unlearn, you know, that's how your brain operates. You know, there's an old saying that you should never meet your heroes because it'll likely be, you know, some sort of disappointment. Yeah. And I actually disagree with that. I think you should meet your heroes so that you can see that we're all human. And the only thing separating you is, you know, space and opportunity.
Yeah. We've met several of our heroes. And I'll say there's certainly some truth to that statement.
It should be disappointing is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. But I won't flat out say like you should meet your heroes. I agree. You should. But they, you know, more often than not, you do realize just how human they are. And I think that that's something to embrace. But I think for most people, what they're really looking for, though, is a community, like something that they can belong to and be a part of. In a lot of cases, that hero that they have sort of put on a pedestal is oftentimes like the leader of that community. And so I think part of the reason why it's so hard is because the idea of breaking up with that sort of relate or like ending that relationship or sort of, you know, removing that person from like this sort of pedestal or sitting at the top of this totem pole in your life often comes with you sort of ridding yourself or removing yourself from a particular community. And I think that's why it's a little hard. But I also think that, and we spoke about this in the previous episode, but the idea of sunk cost fallacy plays a role in this because you have probably invested time and money or both into this type of relationship. And as a result, like that kind of gets in the way if you wanting to kind of, you know, move in another direction or separate yourself. But, you know, I've always believed that, you know, it should be your mission and a goal of your hero, especially if you're like paying for it, it should be your mission for you to outgrow them. Like that should be a natural part of the process. You shouldn't be in a constant hierarchical relationship with them. Like at some point you should sort of ascend to your own throne and move on in your own life.
Yes. And we covered that a little bit in episode, I believe it was 20, where we were talking about how we decide to level up and join a community, which is always beginning with the end in mind as a part of your decision-making process.
Yes.
But I want to go back to what you said about hierarchy, because I personally think that squashing hierarchy in every aspect of your life is such an important tool that you have at your disposal, particularly if you're interested in financial independence. And when I say squashing hierarchy, I don't mean diminishing relationships that you value or getting rid of cultural customs that come up when you encounter an elder or
you mean
more
like a new world order.
A what?
New world order.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I was kidding. Throw it all away.
I don't mean, you know, disrespecting elders or, you know, tossing aside more experienced people in social settings.
Yeah.
But it does mean that if you only see the world as a hierarchy, you're going to spend a lot of time thinking that the only way that you can kind of keep your status or preserve your status is looking for advice and help from people that are above you in the hierarchy, right? Who, by the way, may have gotten there at a totally different time. You talk about your dad responding to a classified ad and landing on his retirement home for $4,000. That path likely doesn't exist anymore. But if you only learn from people that you've put on this pedestal, that's what you see. And you missed out on all the like good lived experience from your peers and your colleagues who are in the trenches with you and leading from the middle or just like slightly ahead of you.
You know what that actually makes me think of? Because just trying to put this in perspective, if that sounded like a wild and crazy idea at the time, right?
Right.
Like, what is today's version of that?
Quitting your job.
Well, I would say.
To pursue a creative.
An altcoin. Is probably the right. That's
or
a comparable
NFTs,
example,
like,
or an NFT.
Like that, even NFTs, I'm still wrapping my head around. I think I'm finally there, but it's taken me a while, and I've had to like get rid of the people, not get rid of, but demote in my hierarchy the people who are just completely writing it off as dumb or dismissive. And it's like, okay, well, that speaks to, you know, how you understand how value is created in a digital world.
Well, not to mention, you know, in hindsight, and particularly when it comes to the mainstream media, whether it's financial media or just sort of the broader media as a whole, whenever we sort of crown people as heroes, it's often because they took the unpopular route.
Right.
But during the time, during the process that we're doing it, we don't necessarily applaud them or crown them as such, right? We ignore them, we call them crazy. And then 20, 30 years down the line, like, and again, just using my father as an example, that's a great example. He's done a lot of amazing things. Like he started, he's been retired for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. He still has tax business that he does on the side. Like you can't call this guy during tax season because he's doing people's taxes and enjoying it. It helps keep him sharp and he makes a little bit of money on the side. But if you were to sort of line up all of the best financial decisions that he made, this is a guy who has worked over 50 years. He has invested consistently throughout his life, through the ups and downs, multiple sort of, you know, market cycles. Mm-hmm. the best financial decision you ever made was to respond to a classified ad. And it's like, wow. And I think a lot of people struggle with that because, you know, we also put, you know, culturally and socially so much value on education and, mm-hmm. and hard work and all
planning,
of these
things. Planning and trying to control everything.
And it's like, gosh, it's I'm willing to bet he never reads the classified section.
Oh, yeah.
He just happened to be reading it one day and said, why not?
Why not?
And that was the best financial decision you ever made. And there it is. Story over. So I think a lot of people, you know, kind of, I'll say can't relate to that. But I do think that there's something to that. Okay. So I also say, you know, you were kind of talking about hierarchy. And it made me think about the term personal finance experts.
Oh, Lord.
Which is like, I hate that term. We even said it today. We had a talk earlier. And I flat out told them, it was like, you know, financial role model is like my preferred
we're comfortable with that.
Term. But that's because I've never met anyone who is an expert on all financial topics. Typically, you can be an expert in one particular area, maybe two or three. But it's such a huge world that you're rarely going to find one person who knows it all. What you are going to find, I think, more often than not, are people like us who are generalists. We know a good bit about a lot, but we can't really go that deep in a lot but we can't really go that deep in some of these topics of a conversation without opening up a book or going back to some reference guide, double checking to make sure that we're not saying something that's incorrect, et cetera. So that's what I think about when I think about, you know, experts. But yeah, when you mentioned hierarchy, it really made me think about that. And it also made me think about the episode that we just shot. And so for those of you who are listening, maybe you know, maybe you don't. We have a video series called Money on the Table. It's on pretty much every social media network. And in episode 6 of season 2, we sat down with a group of people, one of which was one of the most brilliant Mayans in the personal finance space. Her name is Berna, and she shared her thoughts. We were talking about sort of what's changed in the financial landscape in the last couple of years. And, you know, she sort of spoke about that, like this, what you were alluding to, this sort of tearing down of these structures and these institutions, and also like these identities or heroes that sort of stand in the way of the people who want to learn and their actual goals. And she realized that one of the things I was missing was just like flat out telling people that you have that power, right? Like you actually do need to be your own hero. And it was really just a message of empowerment. And I think we're starting to see more and more of that. And I'm just really excited because I think Berna is without question going to be one of the leading voices of the future when it comes to personal finance. So I'm happy that that's a central sort of pillar in her message.
Absolutely. So speaking of empowerment, let's get to the other side of this issue, which is kind of what to do when you realize that maybe you might be outgrowing your financial hero. And I think, like we said earlier, realizing that you might be outgrowing them is a process in and of itself.
Yep.
Like it might start with just like disagreeing with a little something or asking them for advice and they kind of redirect you in a way that feels dismissive or you just flat out disagree with, or they don't support you the way that you want to when you're ready to take your own risk, your own version of responding to a classified ad that you saw in the paper. So it could come a number of ways, but they're basically little signals that you might have outgrown, you know, this person and their advice. And for me, I think the journey to move past that always starts with asking yourself a fresh set of questions. And some of the questions that have helped me in my own journey have kind of been, one, do we have each other's best interests in mind? Two, whose voice is the loudest in my head? So if this is someone that you've been listening to for a really long time, you can start to hear their voice interrupt your own voice when you're thinking through an opinion.
Yep.
You can be steady on a point and then all of a sudden you're like, but what about? And really, it's this other person that has like kind of programmed themselves in your brain. And the third question is, what resources exist so that I can better educate myself? So this is a way of kind of snapping out of the back and forth between you and the other person in your head and going to look for a third party who can either help you recontextualize your question or rephrase your question or give you some new inputs to think about as you're trying to like come up with an answer.
I love that. I don't have my own set of questions, so I'm just going to subscribe. I'm going to make you my hero in this moment, and I'm just going to subscribe to your questions and co-sign those. But no, I completely agree. The only thing I will add is, you know, it's fine to have a hero, but you should enter that relationship knowing that you will at some point, like, outgrow their console. Like, it's a part of the natural process. And if you haven't, quite honestly, you should be a little skeptical, right? Or you should take that as an indicator that perhaps you haven't grown. And if you haven't grown, then you might want to consider whether or not that is, like, by design,
right,
in some ways, right?
Right?
Like, if your hero, as a part of, let's say, their program or curriculum, is sort of always kind of moving the end goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really, if we're being quite honest, just a way of kind of keeping you on the hook. Like, at some point, I feel like your ultimate crowning moment should be something that is a celebration for both of you.
Yes.
Something where it's like, great, now go out there and leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Leave me alone.
You don't need me anymore. But, like, really, like, that should be a shared sort of end goal there. But I think that's another key indicator, is like, if they're always sort of moving the end goal, you know, always having to kind of buy into this new idea, this new layer or something like that, it's like, all right, it doesn't feel right, because it sort of maintains or reinforces this hierarchy. And ultimately what success, I think, looks like is you realizing that you actually get to set the tone,
mm-hmm,
or the direction or the trajectory for your own life, not what someone else has dictated for you.
Yes. All right. The second thing that I would recommend doing, particularly if your financial hero is someone that's close to you, that you've kind of defaulted to for advice over time, is to fix the relationship imbalance by changing your expectations, right? So if you find yourself in a position where, again, you're disappointed by the level of advice or support that you're getting from your financial hero, the goal isn't to scratch that itch by trying to make them say or feel something different. So often we just double down on trying to convince them to see our point of view, right? So, like, let's say your mom is your financial hero and you're trying to convince her that leaving your good job as a project manager is the right thing to do because your side hustle is taking off.
Yeah, you've been good luck.
Right. And you have all the evidence in the world. You've been working with this up and coming content creator. They've led to 4 and 5 new contracts. And so now you've got a little business going on where you're doing the same skills at work, but you're doing it for an industry that might be growing. This is a very specific example, but I promise it's not about me. So if your mom doesn't immediately support you, the answer isn't to, like, dig in and feed her all your lines about why this makes sense for you and hope that she changes her mind, but get frustrated that she doesn't. The goal is to hear her out, thank her for her feedback, if applicable, and then move on, right?
Yeah.
Like, part of this breakup process is recognizing that there are going to be some things that you can get from the relationships in your life, even the existing ones, but it's not all things. And continuing to expect these people in your life to be all things to you is kind of like a wasted effort and energy.
Yeah, and that can be tough to hear and do for a lot of people, specifically when we're talking about our parents. Because, you know, we spoke about how our fathers, you know, are in many ways our financial heroes. But what we've done is sort of put that into perspective as our life situations and our financial goals have changed. And I think one of the other things people who are struggling this need to be mindful of is the context in which your heroes or your parents, if we're continuing with that example, may have framed their sort of point of view,
mm-hmm,
right? Like what their work environment looked like at the time. So when I think about what my father went through in corporate America at the time that he was working in that environment, very different,
right,
from what I was going through. And so his point of view on how to get ahead is, I'm not going to say outdated, but just different, not mm-hmm nearly as relevant as our experience even 10 years ago. But even that has changed quite a bit from what I think a lot of people are experiencing right now. And so times have changed. And even if you zoom out and we're not just talking about their experiences in the workforce or their experiences as entrepreneurs, just think about, like, just the broader impacts of society and how ways of life have changed, how social norms and cultural norms have changed and evolved. And so all of those things, I think, play a role into it, and I think need to be brought into perspective as you're sort of receiving this counsel or and deciding whether or not to accept it or reject it.
Yes. And I think it goes back to hierarchies, like you said. You know, hierarchies give us this sense of stability and order in a chaotic world,
yep,
but they also can reduce the amount of information that each level has access to. So unless you know to specifically ask about the context in which somebody made a decision, you don't have the same access to the level of information that they had. And,
correct.
And even if they tell you the answer, they may be forgetting something. People tend to summarize and oversimplify all the time.
Yes, so, they do.
Yeah, Toyota, which is Toyota, the car company, which is a Japanese company, has this decision-making principle called Gemba. I believe that's how you pronounce it. I don't speak Japanese, but that's how it's spelled, G-E-M-B-A. And the way that they run their company is, instead of depending on hierarchy, the people who are closest to what's happening actually make the decisions, because they believe that the more hands-on knowledge that a decision maker has, the better their decision will be. And it's something so simple and something so intuitive that it's almost surprising that we don't feel the same way over here in American culture. Surprising if you're not like a student of history. But yeah. My advice here is to be like Toyota. Get close to your decision. Recognize that you are the closest person to your decision, and then make the call. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back after the messages from our sponsor.
And we're back. You know, I just want to say that as someone who studied abroad in Japan, I want to guess it is Jimba. But I don't know for sure. I'm going to Google it.
This
afterwards.
Is like GIF and GIF.
Oh, gosh. Don't get me started. Anyway, I'm immediately thinking about peanut butter.
And my dad.
And your dad.
Who calls it GIF.
He sure
but he
does.
Also calls Uber Uber. So yes. There's that.
Blue. But I appreciate your nod to Toyota as someone who studied abroad in Japan. And if I may, I just want to go ahead and add in another term that I think is somewhat relevant here. It's another Japanese term. It's one that I'm familiar with and have incorporated into my life, which is Kaizen, K-A-I-Z-E-N. And it's this idea of continuous improvement. And it's a principle that is central to Japanese culture, like not just work culture or any particular company, but it's a principle that's central to Japanese way of life. I think it's relevant in the United States and in our culture as well, but it's not as transcendent across different age and like ethnic groups as it is over there. Mm-hmm. But in all things, it's this idea that they are culturally wired to recognize that that is a natural part of the process, that there is always sort of room for improvement. And as a result, you should accept that idea of continuous improvement as a part of life and not something to be avoided.
Yes, I love that.
Kaizen.
Kaizen and Gemba. Jimba.
We'll figure it out.
I'm fluent now, basically. All right. So we talked a lot about family, but there's another type of hero relationship that isn't necessarily about closeness and more so about imitation and mirroring a path or a behavior in the hopes of getting the same result. It's kind of like this aspirational hero relationship.
Yeah.
And I think this manifests in the personal finance space with teachers and coaches who have these proven steps that they encourage you to follow. And then in teaching you that method, they kind of become a hero to you because they've given you this very clear path. You touched on this briefly with Robert Kiyosaki, but I'm bringing it back up because there will always be people that you admire financially or otherwise. But after you borrow their style and kind of glean their best lessons, your goal should be to learn to see like they see, right? To help you understand the origins of their perspective, you have to learn to look at the world the way that they look at the world. So this can come out a couple of ways. You can look at what books they're reading. Who are they following on social media? What articles are they quoting? What are they afraid of? Listening to their interviews. And if you ever get a chance to be in person with them, asking them a question that's very specific to the way that they see the world. And then from there, you can apply that lesson to your own experience. In tech, they call this process reverse engineering. And it's almost like taking something apart to figure out how it works.
Yeah.
But for me, I just think that this leads to a healthier, more balanced relationship with your heroes because it prioritizes your growth instead of this never-ending cycle where you're constantly waiting for validation and reassurance from them to move forward. You kind of just learn to look at the world the way that they look at the world, and then you don't have to give up anything that you currently, you know, experience.
Yeah, I love that. See as they see. And you're absolutely right. Like I have in my own ways, and as I'm thinking about, you know, as we were talking, thinking about some of the heroes and leaders in my life that I've admired, to your point, it wasn't really about trying to replicate with precision exactly what they did. It was really about recognizing whether or not I might be in the type of environment that they were in when they made a comparable decision.
Yes.
And as a result, sort of incorporating elements of their decision-making process or sort of problem-solving process into my decision-making and using that to sharpen my sort of next move. So
it's funny because I'm in a position now where I'm recognizing that I may be somebody's financial role model or hero.
No, you certainly are.
And so like I'm training myself to share more of my thinking, to not wait until it's like a fully baked piece of content or a fully thought out article, well-sourced. Like if I read an article and it resonates with me, I want people to know that I read the article. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but like just sharing more of the behind the scenes aspect of how I'm forming my financial perspective is important.
Love it.
Now, you know, I can't do a podcast without getting a little esoteric and philosophical. So I'm wondering if you think that all of this, to some extent, boils down to contentment.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, isn't the real question, like, are you willing to kind of cap the value that you've extracted from one relationship as enough and not expect them to be a hero to you forever? Right? Are you willing to just say, you know what? That's good. We're good. You've done your part. This has been fun. And I no longer expect you to be my hero, because at some point you have to cultivate your own garden and look back at your own experiences and progress and be your own hero. That doesn't mean that that person's contribution is any less valuable or that you still can't have them in your life.
Right.
It just means that you're consciously relinquishing them of a role that they currently play and probably replacing it with somebody else.
I've never thought about it that way, but I think you're right. I think it certainly has something to do with, you know, the idea of sort of being content. I do think it has a tinge of, you know, like making relationships seem very transactional, but I'll say that feeling can be curbed a little bit. So
yes.
Like if you assume that your departure from one type of relationship or hierarchical structure and moving into another is an opportunity for you to pay it forward, then I think that that can sit a lot more comfortably with people, right?
Right.
Like just this idea that I came here to take this from you and then I'm going to leave. I can see how that may not necessarily sit well with people, but I do think that there's something to be said with when you say, wow, I want to help sort of pay it forward. And this could look, you know, in any number of ways, but it's a matter of saying, I want to make sure that other people have this set of information or perspective that they can use into their own life. And, you know, accepting the fact that you've got what you need from this. And one of the best things you can do is to help to inspire or teach others.
Yeah, I don't want it to come off as transactional. I want it to come off as evolutionary.
Yeah.
Because we like to think that our consumerism culture is limited to just goods and services, but you have to think deeper about what it's done to our relationships. We expect them to go on forever, the exact same way, in the exact same pace, without recalibrating and making the necessary adjustments.
Yeah.
So, you know, we should view outgrowing a financial hero the same way we think of a child outgrowing their shoes. Doesn't mean you don't need shoes anymore or that you don't appreciate what those shoes have done for you. Nobody expects shoes to last forever. So why do we think advice should?
That sounds like a great book title. It's a little long, but you can shorten it.
Shoes don't advise.
Shoes don't last forever. Why should advice?
Shoes don't last forever. That's cute.
All right, you guys heard it here first. All right, let's wrap this one up. This was an interesting talk.
It was.
I'm glad we had it.
Yeah.
What are your final thoughts?
All right, my final thoughts are, you know, in some sense, our ideals and largely our society are defined by the heroes that we keep.
Oh.
But as the world keeps changing, we're also seeing the mythology of which stories get elevated as heroic begin to shift. And I think it's time we do ourselves a favor and get on board with it. There is nothing wrong with recognizing that advice or people that you admired at a certain stage in your life no longer fit, or that you've outgrown that value that a coach or a teacher can provide. I just think that avoiding the feeling because you're afraid of the consequences that might accompany moving on is just going to weigh you down and, in worst case scenario, keep you stuck financially.
Yeah, I think that there's so much, and we didn't actually get into talking about this, but I'll sort of add on to your final thought by saying, like, there's so much. Oftentimes when people think about sort of stepping away from that, they think about what they're losing, but they don't really think about, like, what there is to gain, right?
Right.
When you frame it up as a weight, right? There's a mm-hmm. weight to, or a cost to that relationship. But like when you have that freedom, like you get your time back, you get sort of full capacity to think
critical
on your own.
Back. Yes.
You get the opportunity to question your own beliefs, whether or not those beliefs are your own or whether or not they were sort of given to you or if you bought into them. And there's mm-hmm. so much more value in that. And it sounds weird because you start off a journey sort of subscribing to a strict set of rules. Mm-hmm. And as you grow, you start to realize that those rules may not necessarily be applicable to you or may not even be applicable to the sort of general public at time, because the reality is time doesn't stand still. And mm-hmm. so these sort of hardcore rules of thumb or the idea of having a sort of strict set of like gurus that you subscribe to shouldn't either. It's all kind yes. of very abstract.
It
that
is.
Wasn't my final thought, but
too
I will,
late.
Well, you know, I'll add that like you can and should be your own hero. Like ultimately that's what it boils down to. That is your mission. That's what success looks like. You becoming your own hero, specifically as it relates to your money. Nobody will or should care more about your money or its well-being than you. Not mm-hmm. me, not Kirsten, not a coach, not a brand, not a financial advisor or teacher or fiduciary. I don't care what their role is. You, at some point, should have your heart and mind set on being at the center of decision-making. That's not to suggest that some of these other factors can't play a role in your success, but you absolutely need to put yourself at the center. And so this idea of sort of outgrowing your heroes isn't necessarily something to be concerned about. It really is just a sign of growth and progress.
Yes. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you liked what you heard and you'd like to be my personal hero, please leave a 5-star rating and review. We'll see you next week.